Thanks, Matt. Overall, as we talk about SREs, metrics and measurement is like some of the most important things that we do on our daily lives, right? Without knowing how our systems are doing, it's really hard to maintain a good quality for our users and customers. So one thing I'm going to do now is go through a series of examples of where metrics have been good or sometimes challenging, and what we can do to improve and learn from examples of where others have run into challenges in the past. I'll use some examples from my job at Bing and Cortana, and I have some other examples just from the industry as well. To begin with, I was going to start with two examples from the airspace industry. The first one is related to NASA. Probably a lot of people are familiar with this issue. In this particular case, NASA was launching this probe to Mars, and what ended up happening at the end was they lost the probe. They didn't know where it went, what happened. It definitely was not a good thing that happened. They had all the right metrics in place. They had the right measurement. Things were in place. Things were being monitored. What happened was there was a mismatch between what the manufacturers of the probe did, which was Lockheed Martin, and what NASA thought they did. So the metrics they used were in different units. One was in SI, the other one is not SI, so that both of them thought they were in different metric systems, which meant the probe ended up being significantly farther than it should have been, which ended up meaning that they lost the thing. The big takeaway for me for this one is a common understanding of metrics between the people involved. Having the right SLA, SLO, SLI is important, but it's not just having the definition, but understanding what those things mean. When we're talking about them, are they talking about an availability for a day or a week or a month? Or are they talking about queries per second or requests per second? Or what is the definition they're talking about? That's something that's important. The second example is from the airline industry. This is actually from the 80s, so a bit old. This happened in Canada. So Air Canada, they had a flight that was flying from Ottawa to Manitoba. It's a relatively long flight. If you know about the airline industry, typically fuel is a big, expensive part of their operation. So what they do is they don't typically fill the tank completely, because that means that if you don't need the entire tank of fuel, you're unnecessarily carrying additional fuel and using up more fuel to carry that additional load. So they don't do that. So in this case, the pilots went over. Back in the day, they had this place where they would go check the fuel. They checked the gauge. It showed a number. Let's, for the sake of this discussion, say that was 100. They said, OK, 100 kilograms of fuel. That sounds good. We can reach there. That's the right amount of time, right amount of fuel. But they took off the flight. Halfway through the journey, both engines turned off. They had run out of fuel completely. What ended up being the problem was that the measurement was actually in pounds, which is about half of what the actual fuel that they really needed, which meant that they just didn't have enough fuel to go through. As I was reading through the article, getting the data for this talk, I said, OK, how would I do a postmortem for this incident with just the limited information I have and what I can do? One of the things I thought through was that why didn't they have a monitor to tell them that the fuel is going low or didn't have it? It turns out, due to a malfunction, the gauge system inside the flight wasn't functioning, which means that the monitoring wasn't telling them that they were going low on fuel. At the end, this is actually a good story, because there were 69 passengers on the flight. The two pilots made it land safely. There were no deaths. Two people had minor injuries, which ended up being a good story. Even related to that, there is more insight to that. The two pilots had some special skills somewhat. One of them had a license for gliding. So that means that without actually fuel, he can glide non-engine-based devices for a long time. He had that experience. And the second, the co-pilot, used to work for Canadian Air Force. He had some experience in landing in conditions, in places where they ended up landing. Eventually, the way they saved themselves and all the passengers was being able to glide through air for over an hour, and then eventually nosediving and landing the plane, which is fantastic, right? This is something we see in our culture as well. Sometimes we have heroes who take up places and save the day on the life set. That's not something we really want. We want systems to work. We don't want people to step up, because then that's not repeatable. But there's also the flip side of it. In this case, if they just had regular pilots who were completely qualified, they might not have been as successful as these two pilots. These two pilots had diverse set of backgrounds. In addition to just having the pilot certification, one of them had a background in gliding. So as we think of building our teams and having our organization, having people with diverse backgrounds is something that can be extremely critical in bringing that additional insight or experience. That can be relevant to our thing. That's something that came in. The big thing for me as I think through that is having a common metric definition, educating the people involved on how do you make sure that they're all having the same common understanding of what those metrics mean, and having the right reliability for this monitoring is super important. One of the top metrics we talk about for reliability of any site is availability, right? How many of you are familiar with this chart? Raise your hands. Okay, a good number of people are familiar, but it looks like a lot of people haven't seen this version of the chart. Often we hear in terms of availability in terms of nines, right? Two nines, three nines, five or seven, and people keep going crazy and adding nines after that. But then what does it really mean when you think of how often or how long a product is up? In the case here, you know, if you take something like 90.9, you basically, per year, when you have four nines, you could be down for 52 minutes per year, and it could still be four nines. Obviously, this is accumulated over the year. You could be losing a microsecond every hour, every day, and all that. But eventually, what that means is that even a number that sounds good, four nines, can still have pretty bad downtime. So one culture change we did within our organization was to speak a lot in terms of downtime. That made people really take a little bit more attention versus just talking in terms of nines, which sounded nice, but when you talk about, hey, you could be down for this many minutes in a week or a month, that made people walk up. And of course, let's just guess, what's a good availability number, do you think, for a product? Any guesses? Three nines, okay. Anybody else? We're not doing an auction, but you can still give some numbers. No other guesses? Okay, four. So there's really no correct answer to this, right? It completely depends on your product. It basically, you want the availability to a place where your users wouldn't notice the problems you're running into. That's basically around the place you want it to be. For something like, let's say, you know, I even saw some parking meters while I was walking outside. For those, if you have like two nines or one nine, I actually wouldn't care. You know, I don't want to pay a fine when I don't take my car out. But if you have something like a device that's doing, I wear glasses, at some point in my life, I'll probably get a LASIK surgery. I wouldn't want that to have three nines. No, I don't want to be the one guy who's going to lose his eyesight because of the had something. I want the availability for that to be as high as possible. So for an online service like Bing, somewhere in this range, you know, between 90.9549, that seems appropriate based on our experience. So it depends on your product. It depends on what the expectations for your customers are and where they think your availability is. That's the right one. The formula for availability, as you can see, is super simple. Is just take the total number of requests, subtract the failures, and divide by total, and then you get a percentage, right? Seems like a simple formula, but we have seen so many cases where things can go wrong in the simple metric because of the way you can make mistakes on calculating how you measure failures, how we measure total number of requests and all that. For us, we try to do full fidelity requests for all official metrics. We have various formal metrics. Part of that is cleanliness of the data, making sure you have the right metrics that are coming in. That means that you're counting the impressions or the requests that are coming in that are user-based. For example, removing all the bots and the noise that may be adding some dilution to your system is an important one. Talk about an example here. Imagine, you know, if you're ordering pizza and they have a metric for delivering pizza on time. If they focus primarily on delivering on time, even if they deliver a box that's empty, they still meet their metric. But no customer would want an empty pizza box, right? That'll be preposterous. But if you just go after one metric, that doesn't really help. I'll use an example of something from us that happened, something similar, I would say. So a typical page on Bing when you search looks like this. In this case, I'm looking for cameras, I think. Canon camera. So you have some ads on the page so we can make some money. And then you have some algo results, web results, so people can click on. If you search for something like weather, you would get the weather answer, tell you what the weather is. You'll get all the links to go to weather.com, AccuWeather, all the sites that provide the thing. That's how a typical page looks like. there was an incident during which, during the time, our availability looked like this, which is pretty much flat. Things were all fine, running very highly available. At the bottom, I have two other numbers. The black one shows you the query volume. There's a slight difference for this market between weekend and weekday distribution. The red one is the red lines are the errors. Clearly, they're on different scale. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a job in this company. Very small number of errors. So during this time, we had an incident where we didn't actually show any web results for the users. We were showing only ads. Our metrics still look like this. Why? Because the measurement that was done was from the UX. We looked at it. The page was rendered. It was a success, which was 200. And it had content, which was good. People were clicking, which is even better. So everything was success. But this is not the product we want to build, right? One of the side effects of this was we made a ton of money during that hour. Why? Because there was nothing else to click on. People kept clicking on ads, you know? If you were the team that works on monetization, they might think, man, just get rid of web and just put ads on it. Clearly not going to work, right? Nobody would ever come back to our product if that's the only thing looking at it, right? So one of the things we do is every time we have an incident in our thing, when we do a postmortem, we go look at, did our metrics show this problem? If not, what is the problem with this metric? Should it have shown the problem? There are cases where each metric is looking at a separate part of the problem. They may not every metric is going to show all problems, but in this case, it should have. After this, we worked on implementing this concept of no algo, no results. Those metrics were included into this dial tone metric we have. That helped a lot. The other thing that helps, I have a bullet point here on opposing metrics. So when we're shipping a product or when you're going through, we look at, if you just purely go on monetization, this is one of the most successful monetization experiments we have ever made. You know, improving the relevance doesn't give us as much money as putting only ads. But we have this other metric called session success rate, which basically determines how successful users are when they're using the product. In this case, after clicking on the ads, a lot more people were dissatisfied. They had to go back and try again. There was a higher number of requeries. So those metrics do help to tell us that, hey, it's not just about monetization, many, they balance out each other. If you really want to go an extreme, I don't know if anybody remembers this page, if you've been in the industry long enough. There was a site called milliondollarhomepage.com. There was this guy from UK who wanted to get $1 million for his college. So he put 1 million pixels on the page. He auctioned off 10 by 10 squares to all these companies. They put it up. You know, if we don't have the right grammar, clearly it is not helpful, created a lot of buzz. But if we were to go down the road of just having more clicks for ads and making money, we'll end up like this, and then we wouldn't exist as a product. The site is still up, though 30 to 40% of the links are broken right now because nobody's following up, in case you're interested. Second example I'm going to use also is from Bing. In this case, the chart is similar to what I explained before. The blue line on top, this shows you the availability, how it was doing. Down here is the volume and the error rate. Does anybody see any problem in this image by looking at this data? One hint is that the total is wrong here. So one thing you will notice here is that there's a big gap in volume here, right? That means that the system, when it was measuring volume during this time series, did not receive any impressions or requests during that time. Availability was great because it was not really zero. It was a very small number. It calculated it. Things looked great. In this case, this particular metric thought that the product is all fine. Clearly, it wasn't. We had other monitors which found the issue, but clearly showed a gap in this particular metric, right? If we just plot that particular plot, that particular segment, it shows there was a big drop during that time. This is obviously narrowed down to a localized area and all that. But the point is that we had a real user impact, and the metric that we trust and we say is a good metric didn't capture it. So it's important to be able to take the incidents, learnings, and put it apply. In this case, it was a black holing that happened at the CDN. But then things like anomaly detection can help in this case. You can say, hey, typically during this time, this is how much volume of traffic you get. Looks like you didn't get it, and then work through that, and that's how we would do. Outside in monitoring also helps in this case. And looking at your sample sizes is something that can be very important. So the next example is kind of an embarrassing one for us. So this was a few years ago, I don't know, 2014. Danny Sullivan, for those of you who don't know, is a prominent blogger in the search space. He talks a lot about Bing, Google, Yahoo, and Baidu, and all the big players. I think right now he even has some relationship with Google. He blogged this. He used to use Bing, and he made this post on Twitter saying that, oh, Bing is so slow, Google is faster, I'm going to switch, I'm not going to use Bing anymore. We looked at our metrics. Awesome. 75th percentile PLT looked great. 99th looked great. There was no problem. It turned out we had a problem at a very high percentile, only for a limited set of users going through a particular carrier in certain cases. But then that was a blindness in our metric, right? In this case, a real user who wanted to use us switched and didn't want to use us was a terrible thing. This shows you really, you know, like any distribution can have a bias. Averages hide things, percentiles hide things. So when you look at metrics, it's not enough to just rely on a certain percentile or certain distribution. We have to look through across. This obviously led us to add additional dimensions to our monitoring. That definitely helped as well. So next one is related to performance measurement. The charts below or the table below, I have a, it's not a super accurate representation, just to give a simplify things here. I put a breakdown of how I would think a performance of a page. PLT is page load time in our world. You have some network time that's spent and time spent on the browser. And obviously the server is on our side, how much time we process. And there's all these static asides like images and scripts and things that's sent to the user. The PLT that's based on W3C metrics captured all this. In this particular example, the query is Tom Cruise images. Don't ask me why, but we go through these celebrities every release. It used to start with Britney Spears, then went to somebody else. Right now, Chris Hemsworth seems to be a popular one. I think it's because of the movie Thor. Anyway, so the point is that the feature team that was working on this feature had a problem. When they were trying to ship the feature, they had a big regression in page load time because there were a lot of images. When you have a lot of images, a lot of bytes means more traffic over the wire network, and things slow down. They said, OK, what if I take these images and just make them be post-loaded? It'll not be part of this metric. PLT doesn't look bad. They can ship the feature. But end users see this until the post-load happens. It's not a terrible experience, but it slows down, right? But in this case, clearly, the metric that we are tracking for performance wasn't catching the thing. Clearly, that team was, or the feature team was, in some ways gaming the metric, right? So the workaround there is, hey, let's look at post-load cases, include that in the metric, and see how that can be applicable. The other improvement is the entire page doesn't matter. The thing that really matters is what shows above the fold. If you're a phone, what's in your viewport, or maybe when you paged on once. And then as you go down more, you can do progressive rendering and other techniques. But the thing that's most important is what's shown to the user at the beginning. And that's where you can look at, you know, users do game. Sometimes engineers, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally, they do game metrics. That's something that happens a lot. This happens in real world as well. Anybody familiar with this rat massacre story? OK, I see two or three hands. Okay, let me just quickly go through the story here. So back in 1900s, 1902 to be precise, French were ruling this area called Indochina, which is current Vietnam. In that case, as they put through this new tier system, they saw this big increase in rats in the city. Clearly, they didn't want rats in the city. There was a problematic. They thought people could have diseases, and it's not really hygienic. They want to control it. So they employed these workers to kill rats. Instead of being paid hourly, they were paid based on how many rats they're killing. So these employees used to go, kill all these rats, bring them to the city hall, look at this, count them, get the money. Obviously, over time, the city hall started to smell not so great. So they said, OK, this is not a good idea. We should do something about it. And also, they saw, just like software, they had to scale. The number of people they were employing just didn't work. They said, OK, why don't we go the Uber model and have any citizen that captures a rat given the money for this? They said, OK. They expanded it. Then they said they saw a big increase in volume of rats. Somebody thought, OK, we can't get everybody bring the rats. And then they said, we'll change the rule. instead of bringing the whole rat, just bring the tails of rats. That's enough. That's a proof. So good. The smelly area reduced. People started bringing tails. As I started to look at it, the number of rats didn't reduce. It was still very high. And they suddenly started seeing all these rats without tails walking around in the city. So what ended up being is that people started to cut the tail because that's beneficial, but then kept the rats because they wanted to breed. Otherwise, you lose your source of income, right? And also, they had this farming where they kept breeding rats, cutting tails, bringing it, making money. So people do game metrics. So we have to figure out what the right incentive is and how we go through this. The second example is similar. Anybody familiar with these two images? Okay, couple of people. So this is actually a lot older, in the 1700s, 1800s. One image is from Scotland, the other one is from England. In between, they were taxing people based on the number of windows they had. There are different structures. They said anything more than 10, you get taxed more per window. What did people do? They started boarding up windows. Those are real windows. They only get a charge if you have windows. They said, okay, we have these windows. Put shades. That's why you see what's going on here. All these things are windows that were taken out later on. Again, as you do metrics, they can have unintended consequences. That's something to keep in mind. The way we drive people to build metrics, behavior can be changed. Some closing thoughts. Any of these metrics are really not helpful if we don't have very high quality. Correctness is important. Completeness. The last one is cleanliness. Going through the analysis, getting the right impressions, removing bad things is important. Metrics do get gamed. It's important to make them, keep them updated. The incentives example showed up. You wouldn't expect what people can do. People look, take the path of least resistance, whether it's good or bad. That's something to keep in mind. As you're building metrics, it's easy to get an overload of metrics. You keep adding new ones. It's important to review the ones you already have to say, do you still need these metrics? Or do we need to when you add the new one? Sometimes metrics do flatline. It's very important to make sure that you improve on them and so that they don't regress. Otherwise, if you don't pay attention to a metric, just say, hey, let's maintain it this for this year, it might regress. Those are some thoughts I have. My contact info is email and the Twitter account is here. Feel free to ping me if you have questions.